Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I share my thoughts on the epistemology of fatness. I chat with Julie Rochefort about shifting the focus, and I spotlight a blog from Brian Stewart at Red Number 3 about mush. With my recent 15 minutes of fame, I've attracted attention from people who find what I do distasteful, disgusting, and or dangerous. They post comments on YouTube, send me harassing emails, troll my online writing, and send me Facebook messages of hate and mockery. They express their disbelief at my work and concern over my dangerous message that fat people deserve the same rights and dignity as non-fat people. They share their disgust with my body and call me hurtful names I have not heard since the playground. Many of these people are happy to contradict the work that I do and even the life I portray. And I'm not alone in this. These strangers insist they know more about my body and my behaviors than I do. For example, they tell me, "You can't be that fat without eating at least 4,500 calories a day. I appreciate that you think you're happy, but there is no way you can be happy being that fat. You're kidding yourself if you think it's okay to be so grossly fat." These individuals are trying to get me to understand that they are a better judge of my health, my identity, and my life than I am. They believe that they know things about me and are happy to dismiss anything I have to say about my life that does not fit in with what they believe they know. So when it comes to fatness and fat bodies, who gets to be a knower? Authority figures, be they physicians, politicians, or others, are happy to speak about issues of weight, health, and behavior. And many of them are happy to do so without having any empirical evidence behind them. Talking point number one, being fat is unhealthy. Everyone nods. Talking point number two, if fat people ate less and exercised, they would no longer be fat. Cue nodding. Talking point number three, this is the first generation of children who will not live as long as their parents. Vigorous nodding ensues. These phrases are thrown around by authorities, media outlets, individuals, and even cartoon characters. Rarely do they offer any reference for their claims or empirical evidence to support their statements. They are knowers. And the truths they speak are known by most and therefore true. Full stop. But if you choose to speak out against or challenge those talking points, you'd better have a long list of empirical evidence to back up your claims. You better have peer-reviewed, positivistic articles from medical journals. Lots of them. And even then, you will most likely be accused of cherry-picking evidence or falling victim to confirmation bias. If you choose to engage in this kind of research yourself, especially as a fat person, you are simply self-serving and looking for an excuse for your own moral failings. How convenient for you that your research finds that you are not the worst thing in the world, responsible for global warming, terrorism, and rising healthcare costs. Sounds like someone is trying to justify their own fatness. When it comes to fatness and fat bodies, who gets to produce knowledge? Fat people across the world are told that they are not allowed to know their own lives. They are contradicted by family, friends, and strangers. They are challenged by every caricature of a fat person in movies and television. They are repudiated by the real fat people on television and in magazines who are unhappy and trying to change their lives by trying to change their bodies. They are questioned by every negative news story about fatness and fat people. They are presented a single way of being. This is what fat is. This is what a fat person is like. This is what a fat life is like. And anyone who suggests otherwise is lying. When a fat individual does stand up to their family or friends or classroom or larger community and says, "That is not me. That is not my life. My life and experiences are different," they are often ignored or dismissed or infantilized or patronized or called liars. When it comes to fatness and fat bodies, who gets to know? The trolls who contradict me seem to honestly believe that they know me and my life and my behaviors better than I do, and they are angry that I am suggesting a different truth than the one they know. They want to take away any claim I have to agency or to an authentic life or experience, and they get really, really, really mad when I refuse to let them. But here's the bottom line for me. Fat people are the ones who know best about their lives, their behaviors, and their experiences. Fat people are knowers, and fat people know. Fat people produce knowledge. And if what they have to share, say, or show contradicts the norm or common sense or the accepted truth, that's too fucking bad. But that doesn't make it any less true. Today is Julie Rochefort, a registered dietitian who practices from a health at every size perspective and the founder of Shift the Focus. Julie, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Maryland today.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I got first introduced to you and the work that you did by someone, I think it was Marilyn Wan, the namesake of the show, circulating around a video from a TEDx talk that you did about weight bias and weight discrimination. Can you tell me how that all came about?
Well, TEDx is an independently organized TED event where a city or a university will host a TED-like performance. So traditionally, you have a certain amount of time to kind of go and speak about something that you're passionate about. Uh-huh. And this opportunity came up while I was doing my master's at Ryerson, so it was a TEDx Ryerson University independently organized event, and I wanted to speak about weight bias because it was something that I kept reading in research, and it has been long-standing, and I was getting really antsy on why I haven't heard about it and why I'm already, gone through all my dietetic education, now I'm into a master's, and that's when I kind of got exposed to it. So I was like, you know what, I need this platform, I need this opportunity to kind of voice it, and there we go.
So what kind of reaction did you get from the people who were in attendance?
I was the last, one of the second last people, so I didn't get to see too many people when I left, but I had a lot of positive, people who did come up to me were very supportive. I actually went around and had those people sign a scale so I was like, sign and pledge to not be weight biased, and people really resonated with that, and I got some emails, and the worst of it kind of came on YouTube when people, said their own opinions and had their critiques, and that was hard, but all in all, it was mostly positive to my faith.
So you said that you had, kind of decided you wanted to do this particular topic because in your studies as a dietitian, you really hadn't been exposed to a lot of this kind of information before in terms of weight bias and weight discrimination. Why do you think that's not a normative part of that kind of curriculum?
Well, I think that traditionally dietetics is often seen as, the so-called weight expert or weight loss expert, and culturally that could have been protected from the professional stance of the dietitian for the reason that it is really our job to do that, so why would we bring that up? It's not weight bias. It's not seen as weight bias. It's seen as helping the fat individual lead to health. So again, that association between health and weight.
That's interesting. Deb Burgard, I'm not sure how familiar you are with her work, but she's done quite a bit about kind of eating disorders and obesity and stuff. And she always asked the question about whether or not we prescribe for fat people what we diagnose as an eating disorder in non-fat people. Mm-hmm. And that almost always kind of resonates in my mind anytime these kinds of issues come up, because it speaks so clearly to kind of what you're also talking about in terms of not seeing things necessarily as weight bias or weight discrimination, when if we kind of take a step back away from a lot of the assumptions we make about the relationship between weight or health, we can clearly see evidences of those biases.
Yes. Yes. That I've heard that kind of statement where, are we prescribing to that individual what we're trying to treat in those suffering from eating disorder? And that is actually something that got me kind of off the floor and was like, oh my gosh, I was weight biased in my entire training. And I read a few studies. I was doing some work on, you know, trying to defend whether we have an obesity epidemic or not for one of my, I think it was my food policy class. And going to the literature, I was finding that children and youth were, you know, contemplating suicide because they thought they were too fat, and just, you know, what's our role as a dietitian to anyone when we're, you know, promoting a thin ideal and potentially doing some self harm there. So that really, my friends call it, had my little breakdown during my master's about that, and it kind of turned out to be what Shift to Focus is today, is just kind of that advocacy discussion, online discussion community about this.
So are these like ideas and things that you like challenge your other classmates with in your graduate program where you are?
Well, I graduated last year, and
oh, okay.
There was about 18 of us, and we all kind of got exposed to weight, the discourses around weight and obesity from a critical perspective all together. So we all went through kind of this process of grieving where we kind of were shocked, we were in denial, we were confused because, you know, for our entire undergraduate beings and upbringing is what I call it, we were told, you know, weight is, you lose weight, you gain health. It was, at least that's how I left my undergrad thinking.
Right.
And it was kind of a bash over the head, and we all kind of helped each other out, and I'm pretty confident that all 18 of us are quite aware and of weight bias and are really trying to overcome it in our own practices.
Well, and that's a really powerful thing, though. I mean, because as you said, like, it wasn't a normative part of that curriculum, and so the fact that there's now a cohort of 18 who, you know, maybe if they're not like true believers, if you will, they at least, you know, have had like kind of a nugget of doubt kind of lodged in what they thought was truth and what they thought they knew and what they thought was real about weight and health that will hopefully kind of stay with them. And, you know, I guess the idea that each of those 18 people will then maybe, you know, kind of influence two other people and then those people, and it kind of gets larger and larger. And I mean,
exactly.
I guess that's really how we do, you know, as your brand says, shift the focus.
Yeah, exactly. And again, that's why I wanted to take this outside of the academic realm as well. It's like, you know, I would come home with my parents and be and restate everything. You know, when I was an undergrad, I would go home and be like, oh, we have to measure your BMI and let's do this and let's be these bio citizens and, you know, conform to what the government wants us to be or what health, you know, rules say you have to look like. And I would come back 2 years later, I'm like, ooh, so let's talk about intuitive eating. How do you feel? You know,
right.
So it's, they're reacting with me as well. And I wanted to just kind of reach out to the entire public because it is on YouTube and it is TED. So hopefully, you know, it's at like 3,000 something views. And so that's 3,000 people who, at least, like you were saying, have that seed of doubt of what, and they can actually maybe start criticizing what they're hearing and learning when it comes to their own health, regardless if it's about weight or not.
So if someone was interested in engaging with this kind of stuff through your brand of Shift the Focus, how can they do that? Where would they go?
You can go on Facebook, Twitter, Shift the Focus, or myself, Julie Rochefort. It's a lot of, I post a lot of, you know, controversial stuff and debates, and there's lots of individuals from, you know, across the world. You know, I'm in Canada. I'm talking to you across the world. So it's a really international, safe community to just talk about these conflicting findings when it comes to health and weight.
So what's next for you?
Pardon me?
So what's next for you?
What's next for me? Well, I'm currently starting my first, you know, practice as health at every, like with a health at every size mentality or philosophy. So I'm currently just adapting to that in my practice, and I'm hoping to do more school, do a doctorate, but I think, you know, making some money and working is a good first step. My parents are quite happy with
that. Yeah, well, and I mean, like you said, like getting your message out there. A lot of the work that I do is actually about educating people in the healthcare industry about you know, what I call the obesity myths, but it's the same stuff you're talking about. So the real relationship between weight and health. And I think that's a really important thing that we do, because as you noted in your own training, it was really never anything that was ever kind of brought to the surface. And so it's important that if we can get those people thinking in a different way, it benefits their patients of all sizes, you know, not just the fat ones, but also the slim ones as well.
Exactly. And I've presented to undergrad nutrition students kind of as a, I don't want you to kind of go through what I did.
Yeah.
I actually went back to my home university, and it was kind of, it was very odd walking up those, that hill that I used to walk with such a different person. And I find that students, undergrad students are almost, they feel saved by this health at every size perspective. They're like, that does make sense. It makes them feel good. It gets them excited, and it's interesting, and it's an opportunity because they are the next cohort of professionals. So if we can start at the education part, I think we can make a huge difference.
Excellent. Well, Julie, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Maryland today.
Thank you for inviting me.
I really enjoyed this, and hopefully everyone will go look up the Shift the Focused Facebook page, and also go, you know, if they haven't already seen your TEDx talk on YouTube, hopefully they will go check that out as well.
Yes, and it's called Shift the Focus, the title of the TEDx talk.
Excellent. Well, thanks, Julie.
Thank you.
In the spotlight today is a piece from Red Number 3. The piece is titled Mush, and it was written by Brian Stewart. Published on his blog on February 19, 2012. Quote, "Every day I walk to the bus on my way to work and I pass a gym. They have a large banner announcing, from mush to muscles. Every time I see it, I have to recognize that it's talking about me. For the weight loss industry, my body is useful only for the purposes of negative comparison. I'm a before picture. I'm mush. I'm a reason to give money to the weight loss industry. I'm what you aren't supposed to be. It's not just the gym banner reminding me. Newspapers, magazines, billboards, web ads, radio, and TV are all shouting at me for being fat. Heck, it's not just to sell weight loss promises either. At the Super Bowl, both Toyota and Volkswagen used fat shame to sell cars. Everyone takes for granted that I'll agree with them that my body is embarrassing, that I should be ashamed to be fat. Fat shaming is used to not in spite of the risk of alienating fat customers, but in the total expectation that they will be fully on board with it. When I see the cascade of fat hatred promotion, I don't just realize that they are talking about me. I realize that they feel entitled for me to listen and care about it too. Well, I don't. I don't care that they think I should be sad about my fat. I don't care that they think I should feel resigned about their abuse. No, that's not true. I do care, just that I'm not willing to put up with the abuse. My body isn't mush. It is solid, not formless. It may yield to the touch, adapting to pressure, but staying firm. It moves with me, moves as I need it to. You know who started calling fat bodies mush? Someone who has never felt a fat body. Someone who has never lived in a fat body and who knows the form and tangibility. Someone who just looks at our body and thinks we are just sacks of fat. And they have used social stigmatization to make fat people feel this about ourselves. My flesh is mine. It is not mush. It is curves and slopes and moves and adapts. I will not be ashamed of it for the benefit of someone else's marketing." End quote. Closing the show is Alanna Bridgewater with 'Cause You're Gone.
Time ain't got no hold on.